In this session and the following session each day, we're going to again begin with meditation. And I want to focus in these two sessions in the meditation on the Vipassana practice. And as we saw in the Three Vehicles chart, that within the Mahayana and Vajrayana level of practice, which is what we're focusing on here in Mahamudra, the Vipassana practice is cultivating this wisdom of emptiness, shunyata, the realization of no independent me, no independent world, no independent mind. As a foundation for this, of course, at the Theravada level, the Vipassana practice involves realizing these three marks of existence: impermanence, dukkha, and no self. So these realizations or practices are a very good basis for the emptiness practice. And they themselves have a lot of benefit. So it's not like, oh, now we're great Mahamudra practitioners, so you know that impermanence and dukkha and no self thing, that's not for me. You know, we shouldn't have that attitude. Because remember, if we cultivate the realization of impermanence, it's going to bring us enormous benefit in our life. Now, of course, all of us intellectually accept impermanence. You know, science has proven it. We learned it at school. So all of us have an intellectual acceptance, at least, of impermanence, that things are changing moment by moment. But our intellectual understanding of this fact is not really helping us much in our life. We're still relating to things as if they are quite stable. So actually our behavior is out of sync with reality. And thereby, because of that, when we see something pleasant, we develop a lot of attachment to it. Aversion, if it's unpleasant, aversion. So if we cultivate this Vipassana practice of impermanence, if we really reflect and meditate on impermanence and bring our intellectual understanding into experience, then we're going to find that in daily life, experientially, we're going to start to see things more in a flow state, that things are just flowing. Then if we see things in that way, which is the way they are, that's reality, then there's nothing for attachment to grab. There's nothing for aversion to push against. So you'll find that by cultivating impermanence, you're to the level that you cultivate that, to that level, you'll find your attachment and aversion to pleasant and unpleasant things will dramatically decrease. So that's some immediate benefit of impermanence. Also, impermanence, if we can really appreciate and realize impermanence, we're very close to realizing emptiness. Very close. So it's also a very good basis for the emptiness practice. Again, and it's quite easy to get into this practice because it's not some profound philosophical concept like emptiness that's even hard to get our head around. It's something that we sort of know already and understand more or less intellectually. So we can immediately go into the impermanence practice without trying to get our head around what does it mean. So that's what I'd like to do this afternoon in this session and the next, is to work a little bit at that level of Vipassana practice, impermanence. And of course there are many ways of reflecting and meditating on impermanence. And again, often in terms of Vipassana practice, they often talk about doing what's called the four applications of mindfulness, which means the mindfulness that we have cultivated and developed in our shamatha practice, how do we apply that to investigate reality? And often the presentation is these four applications of mindfulness, which are four things to focus on. And the order they present them in is body, feelings, mind, phenomena. And the reason they pick the body first, because that's the thing that's easiest to focus on. It's physical, tangible. So that's what we're going to do. is we're going to apply our mindfulness to the body. We're going to focus on the body in terms of today, impermanence. Tomorrow, I want to focus on the other two insights here, the insight into dukkha and no self. So we're going to focus on those tomorrow with respect to the body. So again, we're going to start with the body because the body is the easiest thing to focus on. And so we're going to use a procedure that's often used in a number of the, particularly the Theravada traditions. Any of you who've done the Goenka Vipassana retreat have done this practice many times, and that is to simply scan the body, observing what's arising in the body, observing sensations in the body, and just observing them without, and again with bare attention. As I mentioned briefly before, in this practice, in Vipassana practice, we are looking directly at what is there. So in this practice, we are looking in the physical body. So we're directly looking at the sensations within the body. So in this practice, we're not imagining the body, we're not visualizing the body, interpreting things. We are simply looking directly at what's there. So we're going to go through a scan, looking in the body from the head to the toes. And in this session, I'll lead you through it step by step. And then in the next session, you can do it yourself. Because with this practice, initially, it's good to sort of start slowly, step by step, and then go back to the beginning and do again. But slowly, as we become better at the practice, you can start to move through more quickly. And also in this practice, and this is going to help you in the next meditation when you're going to do this guide yourself, is that often it's recommended in this practice that if you're scanning through the body and you get to a point where you don't notice any sensation or there's some sort of very heavy sensation, is just stay there for a little while and see what happens. See if you can start to pick up some sensations, or if there's this sort of heavy sensation, see if it stays like that or it changes. So that's and some instruction I'll give in the next session. But in this one, we'll just go through very slowly, step by step, observing the body. Okay. Any questions about that? I think it's fairly straightforward. So again, we'll do one 24-minute session, and then we'll go back into the text. Starting to look at the text. Okay? So finding a nice comfortable posture. So again, as always, we begin by preparing the body, setting the body into a state of relaxation, stillness, and vigilance. Again, using the out-breath to relax and release any tightness or tension in any part of the body. allowing the breathing to settle into its natural rhythm. Setting the mind into a state of ease and relaxation. Letting go of any thoughts of the past or the future. Simply allowing the mind to come to rest in the present moment. Simply focusing on the sensations of the breath throughout the body. So now, having prepared body, speech and mind, we can enter into Vipassana practice. This Vipassana practice, of course, is to scan the body, observing the reality of the body, observing the reality of the sensations within the body. So we can begin by focusing on the area at the top of your head. Noticing any sensations in this area. Observing them with bare attention. And then slowly moving your attention down to the area of the face, observing any sensations in this area. And slowly moving around to the back of the head, observing any sensations there. moving down to the area of the neck. Observing any sensations with bare attention, not commenting, observing whatever's there. Moving across to the left shoulder, moving slowly down to the left upper arm, the left elbow, down to the left forearm, and then moving down to the left hand. Palm, the fingers, right down to the fingertips. And then moving back up to the right shoulder, observing any sensations there. Moving slowly down to the right upper arm, the right elbow, down to the right forearm, and then moving slowly down to the right hand, the palm, fingers and fingertips. And moving back up to the shoulders and focusing on the area of the shoulder blades, the top of the back. Then moving slowly down to the area of the center of the back. Slowly down to the lower back area, focusing on any sensations there. And then moving back up to the upper chest area. And then moving slowly down to the central chest area, the area around the diaphragm. Moving slowly down to the area of the stomach. And then moving down to the area of the abdomen. And then slowly moving across to the left hip area. moving down to the left thigh. Down to the left knee, moving slowly down to the left calf and shin area. Down to the left calf, and sorry, the left ankle, and moving slowly down to the left foot. Right down to the tips of the toes. Moving back up to the right hip area. Down to the right thigh. Moving slowly down to the right knee. Down to the right calf and shin area. Down to the right ankle. slowly moving down to the right foot. Right down to the tips of the toes. Any comments or questions about that practice? Now, probably a number of you, when we did that scan, probably didn't pick up a lot. Maybe the odd sensation here, but maybe a lot of blank areas where you didn't notice anything. The question is, of course, why don't we notice these sensations? Is it that they're not there? And of course, the sensations are there, but we just don't notice them because our mind is not very focused, it's not very calm, it's not very clear. So this is why, and we're going to be looking at this in this text, of course, is that the basis of Vipassana practice is shamatha practice. Because if we don't put any effort into developing a calm, clear, focused mind of shamatha, we can put a lot of effort into vipassana practices as this. We can scan our body day in, day out, and not get very far, not noticing much, because our mind is distracted or completely dull. So, therefore, it's important to put some effort into the shamatha practice. For example, maybe quite a number of you have done the 10-day Goenka Vipassana retreat. But anyone who's done it will realize that actually the first 4 days of that retreat, there is no Vipassana. The first 4 days simply involves focusing here at the breath, at the nostrils. So this is just shamatha practice. So for the first 4 days, you spend 10 hours a day focusing here for 4 days, nothing but that. And the reason being, of course, is it's understood that if we don't develop some stability and clarity of attention, then there's not much point going scanning the body. So therefore, 4 days are spent just developing that mindfulness, that attention skills. Then for the next 5 days, they do the scan. And hopefully then, because of developing a little bit more clarity and focus, then you can start to pick up more. So we're going to be doing that meditation again in the next session, the beginning. But next time, I'm not going to guide through. So you do it yourself. The purpose being is that with this practice, then we should go at a speed suitable to us. So if you're finding you're not picking up much, then you can go more slowly. Spend a bit of time in an area if you don't notice anything. Stay there a bit longer. Of course, eventually we'll need to move on. So it's not like we don't notice something in the face and we just stay there for the next 30 minutes. Maybe that's not so good. But, you maybe stay there a little bit longer, maybe a minute or so or two. And then if you don't notice anything, move on. But as soon as you start to notice some sensations in an area, then you can move to the next area. So you can go at your own pace. And initially, it's helpful to go in steps, as we did in that one. But as you become more familiar with it, you can do it more in a flow mode. So then you can be sort of, instead of stepping through, you can be flowing down parts then you can start to flow like down both sides at the same time, both the front and the back at the same time. And then you can eventually just do the whole body scan very quickly, but slowly work up to that. So it's good at the start to do a step-by-step method, go through each part of the body individually, and then slowly as we start to get better, we can more quickly. So therefore, in that next session, then you can go at your own pace, very slowly, step-by-step, maybe a little bit more quickly in a flow thing, or really quite quickly if you're very good at this practice. And then, of course, when you finish the scan, then you go back to the start, to the head, and do again. Keep doing that until the end of the session. Question?
When I was scanning that, and my knees are aching, and when I thought about that, it made it even worse.
Right. So, very good point. So, remember, in this meditation, we are using bare attention. So, we're not interpreting, we're not sort of labeling, we're not going, oh, what's that, why is it there, I don't like that, go away. All of that commentary we need to let go, because as you said, if we get to a point, particularly the knee is very common, if we get to that point and we notice some sensations, then of course automatically what we normally do, we go, what's that, oh, pain, I don't like that, go away. And then as soon as we do that, of course, as we mentioned already, we magnify the amount of discomfort. So, and I can use my own experience to highlight this point. When I first did this Goenka retreat many years ago, and we were doing this scan, I actually had a damaged knee. I just damaged my knee some months before in a sporting injury. So when I was sitting, after 15, 20 minutes, it got very painful. And then as part of the instruction, when you get to that point and you notice no sensations or some quite heavy sensation, just stay there. Just stay there for a short time and observe. So, of course, when I got down to my right knee, big, heavy sensation, very painful, nearly overwhelming. But if I could have this bare attention and not label and project and go, oh, I don't like that, go away. If I didn't do that, if I could simply stay there and be present and observe what's actually there, what actually happened was this very intense pain started to break up into smaller bits of pain, and then eventually it just broke up into thousands of intense sensations, because actually that's all that's there, is many intense sensations firing very quickly. So as long as I could stay there and see what's actually there, it was a signal that, you know, there's something going on there I need to attend to, but I could quite easily sit with that. Soon as my mindfulness went, and I didn't use the bare attention, soon as I went, oh, that's pain, I don't like that, oh, go away, then it became overwhelming. It really was like overwhelming. So, therefore, this practice can also be very helpful in developing this bare attention, this not projecting, not having this aversion. So whether it's something unpleasant or whether it's something pleasant, if we can avoid having aversion to the unpleasant and craving for the pleasant, then this practice will serve its purpose. Because the other thing that happened to me was not only the aversion, and I could sometimes let go of that, is that, you know, as I said, I started scanning very slowly, but then after a couple of days of this, I managed to scan very quickly. And then at one point, all of a sudden, there was this flow of blissful sensations throughout the body. And it was so blissful. I'd never really experienced anything like that before in my life. And I thought, wow, that's so nice. I want that. I want that. I like this meditation. And so I craved it. As soon as I did that, gone. And then for the next couple of days, I tried to recreate that because it was so nice. So day after day, I tried to recreate. Every day, I got more and more frustrated. After about 4 days of trying to do this, to recreate that flow, I got so frustrated. In the end, I said, oh, I give up. I don't care. As soon as I did that, boof, back. And then, of course, craving again, gone again. So therefore, in this practice, whether it's some blissful flow, whether it's some unpleasant sensations, if we can simply use that bare attention to observe what's there, then we won't get derailed by our aversion and craving in this practice. So this can be very helpful. Any other comments or questions? So again, you can, as you progress, you can initially scan downwards, but then you can scan upwards, and then also at another level, you can scan internally, not just externally, you can go internally as well. But, you know, step by step, I think to try to do all these more elaborate scan methods as a beginner is just too difficult. So yes, we can do that. Let's now then go back into the text. So again, as I mentioned before lunch, the rest of the preliminaries which we started before lunch, after lunch, we're going to do a little bit of each of that each day in the 2 o'clock session. So if we skip forward now to the middle of page 2, where it says actual practice. So this is the actual practice of Mahamudra. If we read the text, it says, even though there are many ways of approaching Mahamudra, they can all be classified as either Sutra Mahamudra or Tantra Mahamudra. Here I will explain the first one rather extensively, and since the latter one, the Tantra Mahamudra, will be presented using very few words, I will explain that first. So here then, when we talk about Sutra Mahamudra and Tantra Mahamudra, we're really talking about, in those three vehicles, the Mahayana Vajrayana. So we had that chart with the three vehicles. But also, particularly in this Galup school, often when this is presented, you won't see a presentation of the three vehicles. They'll say there's two vehicles. Theravada and Mahayana. Sometimes for Theravada you'll see the word Hinayana. So often it's presented as two vehicles, and within the Mahayana vehicle there are two levels of practice. Sutra and Tantra. So in the Galup school this is a more common way of presenting. But also, this is another way. Of course, these are not two different things. All we're doing is we're dividing up things differently. So when we have two vehicles, Mahayana, Sutra, Tantra, the two levels, then Sutra, Tantra are reflecting Mahayana, Vajrayana. It's the same, just a different way of putting things together. So here, when we talk about Sutra Mahamudra and Tantra Mahamudra, then if we're using this presentation, we would talk about Mahayana and Vajrayana level of Mahamudra practice. So just to be aware of that. So here we're using this way of presenting, but it's exactly the same as that three vehicle presentation. So Sutra here is the Mahayana vehicle, and as we saw, the practices there were the six perfections. At the Tantra level or Vajrayana level, the two stages. So, as he mentioned, and we saw this up here in the actual practice, that the order that they're being presented is Tantra first and Sutra second. only because he says that actually he's going to talk about sutra a lot in this text, and he's only going to briefly mention tantra, so he mentions that first to sort of get it out of the way. In terms of our own practice, of course, we would first engage in sutra level of Mahamudra practice, and when we're well established in that, then we would only then would enter into the tantra level of practice. But let's now, as he's mentioned, briefly look at the tantra level of practice. So remember, the difference between sutra and tantra, or the difference between Mahayana and Vajrayana, is there's the same in that they're both striving for enlightenment. In both, we are developing bodhicitta. In both, we're realizing emptiness. The difference being the level of mind we're using to realize emptiness. Here in the Mahayana and also Theravada, we're working with our coarse mind, the mind we have now. We're refining that with the shamatha practice. We're making our mind more subtle, more calm, more clear, more focused. Then we're using this very mind in our vipassana practice. Whereas in tantra or vajrayana level of practice, we are gaining access to the deepest level of our mind, this very subtle mind, and using that to realize emptiness. So that's the difference. And so let's have a look at, briefly, what's involved in the tantra level or the vajrayana level of Mahamudra practice. So remember, Mahamudra is referring to emptiness, and it's not just a realization of emptiness. In Mahamudra, the main focus is the mind itself. So often Mahamudra practice is called nature of the mind practice because we are using the mind as the object of focus in our vipassana and shamatha practice. So let's have a look at Tantra Mahamudra, bottom of page 2. It says, Tantra Mahamudra refers to the luminosity, that is the exalted wisdom of co-emergent great bliss, arisen through the entering, abiding and dissolving of the winds into the central channel due to skillful methods such as penetrating the vital points of the subtle Vajra body. Let's see if we can understand what that sort of means. Luminosity here is one way of translating this very subtle level of our mind. And this very subtle level of our mind sometimes is translated as the mind of clear light, the clear light mind. But this can, and that's a very literal translation of the two Tibetan syllables, but it can be very misleading because when people hear this mind of clear light, somehow we're supposed to see some sort of light that's clear or something, and that's absolutely not the meaning. So luminosity here, I think, can be a good translation, but it's talking about this very subtle level of our mind. We can talk about three levels of mind. Coarse, subtle, and very subtle. So in the Theravada, the Mahayana level of practice, we are operating at this level, the coarse mind. We are refining the coarse mind through shamatha practice, making it more calm, more clear, more focused. And then we're using that to in our vipassana practice. And then we can talk about more subtle levels of mind. Subtle mind and a very subtle mind. And these levels of mind, normally we don't really have access to in normal practice, but particularly this very subtle mind, which here is translated as luminosity or clear light, it's called sometimes, this is a very powerful level of the mind and very hard to gain access to this in meditation. But the Tantra or Vajrayana level of practice has techniques to gain access to this. And that's what's being said in this sentence. It's saying that Tantra Mahamudra refers to the luminosity, that is, it's referring to the very subtle mind, which is an exalted wisdom of co-emergent great bliss. So exalted wisdom here is a wisdom realizing emptiness. And that mind realizing emptiness is co-emergent, meaning at the same time. So the word co-emergent means simultaneous. Simultaneous is bliss. It's very blissful. So it's, we're realizing emptiness, and at the same time, co-emerging with that is that the mind is blissful, has great bliss. So that mind, it says, so that is Tantra Mahamudra. So Tantra Mahamudra is the very blissful mind, very subtle, blissful, clear, very subtle, blissful mind that's realizing emptiness. How that arises, it says, arisen through the entering, abiding, and dissolving of the winds in the central channel. So with the three levels of mind, together with that, we have three levels of body. Also, often referred to as coarse, subtle, and very subtle body. The coarse body is this body, because our coarse mind, the one that's active now, of course, is associated with this body. So the coarse body is this body of bones and blood and flesh. The subtle mind is associated with the subtle body. And the subtle body is what's being referred to here. The subtle Vajra body, I think it's called. And the subtle body includes these, what's called channels. There's a central channel that goes down the center of the body, and then there's two side channels, and then there's other channels that go out from that. And within those channels, and of course these channels are not some sort of material thing that we can see. So, of course, if we cut open the body, we're never going to see one of these channels. They're subtle energy. And within them, there are various energies flowing within the channels. And then also down the central channel, there are points called chakras. And depending on the system, we talk about 5, 6, 7 or more chakras in the various points. And in the Buddhist system, chakras are constrictions around the central channel that's blocking the flow of subtle energies. So, therefore, it says here that this Tantra Mahamudra, this realization of emptiness, blissful mind realizing emptiness, very subtle mind realizing emptiness, how does it arise? It arises through the entering, abiding, and dissolving of the winds, that's the subtle energies, in the central channel, due to skillful methods such as penetrating the vital points of the subtle Vajra body. So the vital points are really talking mainly about these chakras. Now, the very subtle mind, is one we're trying to activate, is also associated with a very subtle body. The very subtle body is a very subtle wind energy that is always associated with this very subtle mind. Now, how to gain access to this is that this very subtle mind is said to be within the heart chakra. Technically, that's misleading because whatever level of mind we're talking about, mind has no location because it's not physical. But we can say that the very subtle mind is at the heart chakra because the very subtle body that is associated with the very subtle wind energy is at the heart chakra. Now, it's dormant. So how to cause it to be activated is, as explained here, is that what we need to do is all these subtle energies that are flowing through the various channels, we need to withdraw them all into the central channel and bring all those energies, those winds, to the heart chakra. And if we can do that, the heart chakra will open, and then this will become manifest. And then we will have the Tantra Mahamudra. We'll have the blissful, very subtle mind realizing emptiness. So, and to do that, one method to do that is, as mentioned here, is to skillful methods such as penetrating the vital points of the subtle Vajra body. So what that means is to penetrate, it means to focus on that vital point. So we can focus on the heart chakra, or often we talk about the navel chakra. If you focus in any one of these points in the central channel with your mind, then here, at the level of the subtle mind and subtle body, we often talk about the analogy of a rider and a horse. That the wind energy is like the horse, and the mind that's associated with that is like the rider. So they go together. Which means, if you focus your mind at that point, then all the subtle energies will converge to that point. So therefore, one method of bringing all the subtle energies into the central channel is to focus on one of those points in the central channel. Often the navel area, any different practices involve different points of focus, but that's what's being mentioned here. So if we can focus there with a high level of focus, then we can withdraw the subtle energies so they will enter, abide, and dissolve in the central channel. Then the heart chakra will open, the very subtle mind of luminosity will become active, then we're using that to realize emptiness. So that's what that first sentence is saying. Any questions about that?
Yes. So would that be a state you reach and it stays permanent, or are you reaching again and again and again?
So there's going to be a little bit more coming, but on that point, in the three vehicles chart, if we look at the Vajrayana or Tantra level, the practices, it says generation stage, completion stage. Mm-hmm. So what is being mentioned here, this penetrating the vital points of the subtle Vajra body, this is completion stage practice. So to do that, as a basis, we need generation stage practice. Because this completion stage practice, to do this, requires a very high level of focus. Very high level. I mean, of course, this sort of focus and doing this subtle energy work sounds very interesting. So people go, oh yeah, I like that. I like the sound of that. That's for me. And so then people try to do these sort of practices, and usually nothing happens. They're just wasting their time. Sometimes, though, they may have enough ability to through the focus, to shift some energies, but because they're not having the right basis, then the way that energies are shifted is like out of whack, out of balance. And so then, and because we're not then moving the energies in a controlled way, and remember the rider and the horse, so we're moving energies in a very uncontrolled way, and wherever they go, the mind goes, we basically just create mental disturbance. So there have been many cases of particularly Westerners playing with this sort of what's being mentioned here because it sounds exciting and just creating deep psychological disturbances. So very easy at this level of practice to really screw up our own mind. And in some cases, you know, years later, they've still got mental problems that they can't resolve because they've messed up their mind. So this is not something to play with. So therefore, what we see is actually, just to move ahead in the text a little bit, and then it's time for another break, but we'll come back to this after the break. It says, this is dependent upon obtaining four pure empowerments, having properly guarded the commitments and vows, and having familiarized oneself with the generation stage. So to do this, basically it's saying we need a good basis. And I said before that the entry point into the Vajrayana Tantra practice is empowerment, which is what's mentioned here. But to even have empowerment, we need a good basis in the Theravada and Mahayana level of practice. We need a good basis at the sutra level of Mahamudra. So then often when we talk about Tantra level of practice, to even really have an empowerment and to begin the process, even before this completion stage, what is really recommended as a good basis is three things that we can see in our three vehicles chart. So remember that the entry point into the Theravada vehicle, the basis, is renunciation. So of course we need that. And the entry point into Mahayana in general is bodhicitta. Of course that's necessary. And then, of course, here, with this very subtle mind, we're realizing emptiness. So of course we need an experience or realization of emptiness as a basis. So if we really want to do all of this penetrating vital points of the subtle Vajra body, even before we begin any of the Tantra, we need those three things. We need renunciation, we need bodhicitta, we need the wisdom of emptiness. So these three things are the basis of then having an empowerment, then guarding vows and commitments. So also a Tantra, the basis of Tantra is ethics. So that's what it means by guarding vows and commitments. Part of that is really the ethical basis. And we have to be super ethical at Tantra if it's going to work. Then we do the generation stage practice, which is nothing to do with manipulating these subtle energies. But that prepares us to do this. So we need all of that to be able to do this. So this is why it's said here in the text, this is the stages we need to go through. Any other questions? Otherwise we'll take another short break, and then after the break we'll continue on with this discussion. Yeah. Okay. So that's going to come in the discussions. But to give a very simple answer is, we're sort of jumping ahead though, but in the next paragraph it says, in the bottom last paragraph on page 2, it says, it is the Mahamudra accepted by Saraha, who's a great Indian yogi in the Mahamudra tradition. Nagarjuna, of course, Naropa and Maitreka were the early Indian masters who brought Mahamudra to Tibet. It is the innermost essence of the Anuttara Yoga class of Tantra. So this Mahamudra practice is the essence of highest yoga Tantra. And then we've got a little bit more to talk about that coming up. But that's the short answer. Yeah, well, I think she understood my answer, but for many of us, the answer is going to come in my... I have to talk about a number of things. I just wanted to give a short answer, and then the extensive answer is still coming. So don't worry if you didn't understand any of that. Yeah, no, that's fine. That's okay, because we're going to cover that in the next session. Okay, let's take a break. Come back at 5. Again, we'll go into the Vipassana meditation, scanning the body, and then we'll go back and complete the explanation about Tantra Mahamudra in the next session.